out that there has been a package left for us by Bob Cantine from the counties, and this is in response to some of the questions that were asked when they did their information session for us a couple of weeks ago. So I just want to point that out, that you now have that, and to use that information as you will want to. What we're going to do, we don't have any committee measures to, and this is the last day that we can introduce committee measures. After today, if you have anything that you want to have introduced, after Monday, if you have anything that you want to have introduced, it'll have to be a priority bill. Let's see. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2167, and I'm going to ask Jack Kenny to come up. And I don't know if there's anybody else that wants to testify on this or not, but Jack, go ahead and bring up whoever you have. And members, you will remember that this is a bill. I guess I should let you give the scoop on this. Go ahead.
Sure, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2167, we have actually had on the agenda for a possible public hearing, but we did not hear it when it was originally scheduled. The bill transfers the power to appoint the director of the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, transfers that from the commission to the director of the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department. Bill has no fiscal revenue impact and no subsequent referral.
Okay. And the purpose of having this hearing today is that we want to get kind of an update, and I thought that it would be better to go ahead and do it under the auspices of a hearing for the bill itself. There's been some conversations going on between the commission and the housing department, and so Jack's going to give us a little rundown on what's been going on.
Thank you very much, Chair Crumlow. I am Jack Kenny, Deputy Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. I appreciate the opportunity to come to you today with my colleague, Oscar Sweeten-Lopez, who is the Chair of the Oregon Commission on Voluntary Action and Service. As the committee administrator pointed out, the bill as written makes significant changes to the organizational reporting structure of the commission. At the direction of the governor's office, we are meeting with members of the commission and its executive director to identify an optimal approach to delivering the important services that are provided through the commission. Rather than state a position on House Bill 2167 at this time, we prefer providing an update. I appreciate you giving us this forum to do so. Oregon Commission on Voluntary Action and Services was established in House Bill 2265 in the 2001 legislative session. Prior to that, the commission was known as the Oregon Community Services Commission. It had been administratively established in the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Its primary function at that time was to administer certain federal grant programs, the largest of which is AmeriCorps. After an initial attempt to find compromise language acceptable to both the department and the commission was unsuccessful in November, a facilitated meeting was arranged with the assistance of the Oregon Dispute Resolution Committee, and Oscar is going to speak to that in a little more detail in a minute. Three meetings were attended by key commission members, the commission's executive director, and appropriate housing and community services staff during February. The first meeting, a mutually agreed upon strategy was developed for exploring and addressing desired structural changes that meet the needs of Oregonians at no additional cost. The potential for improved synergy between the entities was discussed. Second meeting followed up on the plans that were made at the first meeting and also discussed potential budget reductions. And the third meeting was a discussion of fiscal reporting capabilities at Housing Community Services and the Commission's needs in this area. While the Housing Community Services and the Commission still have work to do to achieve the desired optimal organizational structure, we appreciate the committee's time today holding a public hearing on HB 2167. If the committee would permit it, it could be a vehicle for achieving that outcome. We look forward to reporting continued progress in the near future, and I would be happy to answer any questions, but perhaps it'd be, if it's the Chair's pleasure, to have Mr. Sweeten-Lopez's testimony at this time.
Why don't you go ahead?
Well, thank you very much. Good morning, Chair Crumlow and committee members. My name is Oscar Sweeten-Lopez, and I am the chair of the Oregon Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. I've been a member of the commission for over 5 years now in different capacities, and very proud to say that I began on the commission as a youth representative, AmeriCorps member, and have continued to do that work as I've pursued my professional career and promoting the service that the Commission so highly and effectively has put out to our community, and that's to get people involved to make Oregon a better place to be. So with that, I would just like to thank Jack for his very good overview of the process that we've been in with the Commission and Oregon Housing and Community Services, and really just kind of highlight some of the points that Jack's already touched upon, but that really in your meeting notes that we've submitted to you, you can see the kind of an outline of the process that we've had that Jack also articulated. And most importantly, I think the results of the February 5th mediated session are what I want to kind of highlight to the committee here today, and that's looking down on the talking points that we've articulated. I think we've had some really highly successful mediation. We've really been able to establish some real good dialogue between the Commission and the Department. And in the course of doing that, I think we've really been able to identify that the best course of action at this time would be to separate our relationship as it stands right now with the Department and look for an alternative option to do that. That does not mean, however, though, that the relationship in the sense of what we can do for the state of Oregon with the department would be eliminated, because we feel that that also is going to be probably setting us up in a better position to more effectively work with one another than the current structure is allowing at this time. We have been exploring options on where the commission would be housed at, and right now are in some very good discussions with Portland State University in terms of potentially making the move there, as well as trying to explore some other options. But that's why we wanted to kind of, you know, be able to come here, give you just a brief overview of where we're at, and that really the mediation and the work and dialogue that we're doing with the department is, you know, moving forward in a very positive manner. And, you know, we just are looking forward to continuing that. So with that, if there's also any questions that you have for myself or for Jack, I'd be more than happy to answer those for you.
Okay. Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Mr. Kinney.
Yes.
Hi, Mr. Sweeten. Okay. Sorry for being late. Come in from another meeting. Just briefly, how are both of these commissions funded?
Chair Crummell, Representative Nelson, perhaps I should let Oscar address this, but I'll try. I'll give a start and let Oscar pitch in. They're primarily through federal funds. There is a match required that is provided through the a small general fund appropriation and through some PSU in-kind match. I believe the large majority of it is through the federal AmeriCorps grants. Oscar, is that?
Yeah, that is correct. It's the majority of the funding does come directly from the Corporation for National and Community Service, which is the federal administrator of...
Excuse me, just a minute. Would you say that one more time, what it's called?
The Corporation for National and Community Service. And that is the federal administrator of the AmeriCorps, VISTA, federal funds that are procured out to the states.
And follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
And how much comes from the general fund?
I have that number, I believe. Craig, our chief financial officer, is here, but I believe it's approximately... Is it just under $200,000, Rick, for the biennium? $177,000 from the general fund for the biennium.
Okay.
And is this, continuing, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Is this, now, I'm just curious here, now, will this be split between the two different entities now?
Chair Crummell, Representative Nelson, there's... As I mentioned in my opening remarks, there has been some discussions about how funding will continue in these difficult budgetary circumstances. We're exploring a variety of options. Currently, the general fund appropriation does, the commission is technically is part of the Oregon Housing and Community Services Department right now. So the general fund appropriation flows through our department to match the federal funds. The match currently is provided, as the in-kind match is currently provided through PSU. That's one reason why, as Mr. Sweeten Lopez pointed out, that's one reason why discussions are being held regarding increasing or perhaps moving the commission to PSU. There have been some discussions about whether some in-kind match can be achieved through Housing and Community Services Partners, but at this time we're in the preliminary stages of that research.
Okay. Anything else? I have one question for you. Given the changes that you're talking about with regards to the moving to PSU, separating from the Housing and Community Services Department, is that going to require an amendment to the statutes as they are currently written?
Yes, it would require that, and we would hope that this current House bill would be able to facilitate that transition.
Okay. And I assume then that you will let us know when you probably will want to have amendments drafted through our committee administrator, so I assume that you'll let us know when you're ready to move forward with that?
Chair Crummell, we'd very much appreciate that opportunity.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Just to kind of give you a little bit of a heads up, we're going to we do want to move those amendments forward in a timely fashion. Let me put it that way, so that we don't lose the opportunity that we have with the legislative session to be able to be able to do that. So I would just point that out, that so as you're ready to move forward with amendments, and I think, you know, feel free to bring them to Mr. Brennan.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I understand.
Thank you very much.
Anything else? One more question, Representative.
Just one quick one. Because the bill, nothing else refers to PSU, are you going to finalize that option before we look at the amendment?
Chair Crummell, Representative Nelson, that would be our intent, and we believe the relating clause is broad enough to cover that, and clearly we would have an agreement in place before we would bring forward any amendments.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that we want to point out, is that we'd like to have the agreement sort of in place, ready to go. Everybody's on board, understands what it is that we're, and then we can go in and make amendments to the bill that will facilitate that occurring. I understand the concerns, and Mr. Sweeten-Lopez, I hope that the commission understands the concerns that the department has had, and it sounds like you do, and at the same time, the department needs to understand the concerns that the commission had as well. So I think that you know, we can bring this to an amicable solution, and that's going to be best for every. Then that's going to be best for everyone. So thank you very much for your work on this. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
With that, is there anyone else that wanted to speak on House Bill 2167? Seeing none, then I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2167. And we are going to move then into an informational hearing, which I will open at this time. Members, we have some folks from TriMet, and they have a presentation for us that they're going to do as a video presentation. And then I think they want to kind of give us a heads up on some of the things that are going on with TriMet and how they're meeting some of the transportation needs in the metropolitan area. So, Olivia, let me turn it over to you. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Olivia Clark. I'm the Executive Director of Governmental Affairs at TriMet. And with me this morning is Carolyn Young, who is our Executive Director of Programs and Communications. And I just to let you know, in case I start croaking, I've been home for the last 2 days with this terrible thing that's going around. So forgive me if I break into a coughing jag.
The lights really are going down, I would point out, Lori.
Don't
feel like you're about to go into an abyss.
A deep sleep. I really appreciate the opportunity that the chairman has given us this morning to show a videotape that we made at TriMet really talking about a productivity improvement program that TriMet's been engaged in the last 3 years. And as I was having a conversation with Chairman Crummell one day about general government issues as well as TriMet, we thought that this might be interesting for the committee to see. It's a actually a good government message. It talks about what TriMet's been able to do with the workforce in retooling and looking for productivity improvements. It has a very very brief introduction to TriMet. Let me just say a couple of words and also ask the forgiveness of Representative Mabry, who's already seen this video in House Transportation Committee.
Mr. Chairman, I have seen this video, and I'm quite happy to sit through it again. It's an excellent video.
Oh, good.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you.
Teacher's pet.
Yeah. Oh, I got to say, he gets the apple today.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair. Free ride on the bus.
That's right. A free pass for life. Just to give you a little bit of background, TriMet was established in 1969 and is partly a creature of the legislature, in fact. It is the mass transit district for the Tri-County area, which includes all of Multnomah County and most of the populated parts of Washington and Clackamas counties. It has about 2,600 employees, the bulk of which are the operators, the people who drive the buses and who run MACs and who maintain the right-of-way and so forth. We have about over 88 million rides per year. We have about 100 bus routes. Soon to be 42 miles of the MAX line. And we have roughly a $280 million budget, about half of which is from a payroll tax that is actually established in statute. We've also given you a handout that talks a little bit about this productivity improvement program that we're going to show in the videotape, and Carolyn has been very involved in the actual process and can answer your questions and say a few words about it afterwards. But without further ado, I'll try to see if I can master the machine down here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, could I just ask Olivia, where the half payroll tax on what, and where does the other half come from, please?
Sure. Representative Crummell, Representative Nelson, the payroll tax is established in the statute at roughly 0.6%, and it's levied against the gross payroll of all the employers in the TriMet district. In addition to that, it's something akin to that is levied against the net income of self-employed people, of which there's about 38,000. There's about, I would say, 33,500 employers in the district. The budget of TriMet, a little over half comes from the payroll tax. About 27% comes from the fare box, the fares that people pay to ride, the tickets that some employers pay, the passes they purchase for their employees. And then it's made up of a very small amount of cigarette tax funds, a little over $1 million, I believe. Then a combination of other enterprise revenues, advertising revenues, and federal funds. That last 20-25% is really a mixture of things. I could go back and break that down for you further, but it's...
Yep. I would appreciate it.
Sure.
I was on the committee. I think that gave you $25 million in a committee last year, Transportation Committee, for...
Representative Crummell, Representative Nelson, that was for the commuter rail for lottery bond sale that came through last session. Actually, we're still working on that project, and I believe that Washington County will be coming back and asking you to renew that to keep it going in this next biennium. But I will get back to you.
Mabry will have to take over since he's on that committee now.
Carry on the legacy.
Can you trust me with that?
I'll trust you.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Shall I go ahead?
Go ahead, right. Please. Olivia, I think Gina's going to come to your rescue.
I'm going to need all the help I can get.
Okay. So far, so good.
At least you didn't turn the TV off.
TriMet, the Portland region's public transportation provider, has a national reputation as a leader in the transit industry. TriMet system, which includes some 100 bus lines and more than 40 miles of rail track, provides 90 million rides each year. TriMet's bus and MAX service is a vital transportation option for commuters, shoppers, tourists, sports fans, and others. With a workforce of 2,600, TriMet has one of the top 25 largest payrolls in the region. TriMet is also well known for attracting hundreds of millions of dollars in federal money. In fact, the West Side MAX project was the largest public works project ever built in Oregon. All of TriMet's projects over the past two decades, East Side MAX, West Side MAX, Airport MAX, and Interstate MAX, have been built on time and under budget. Its transit service and its project management record have given TriMet a reputation as a well-run organization and resulted in high approval ratings from the public. 82% of the people who live in the Tri-County area rate TriMet's overall job performance as good to excellent. TriMet's ridership has grown every year since 1989 and is still growing. With increasing ridership coupled with projected population growth, TriMet needs to expand. Regional livability goals call for TriMet to grow service about 4% per year. But with existing resources, TriMet can only expand at about half that rate. New services require more money. But before looking to increased fares or payroll taxes, TriMet first looked inside for savings and efficiencies, because TriMet is much more than buses and trains. TriMet is mechanics, maintenance of way workers, landscapers, engineers, office workers, bus and rail operators, and many others, all working together around the clock to make sure that Portland's award-winning transit system works efficiently and serves the needs of its riders. In December of 1999, TriMet's general manager, Fred Hansen, launched a productivity improvement process. It involves frontline workers in identifying better ways of doing things.
They're the ones who know their jobs best, and what we've been able to find are ways to be able to make all sorts of improvements throughout our organization.
The Productivity Improvement Process, or PIP, builds a framework for continually exploring areas within the agency where TriMet can capitalize on new technologies and make improvements that lead to increased efficiencies and better service.
We've been able to remove some of the real bottlenecks, the real frustrations that some of our frontline workers have faced. In fact, I've had employees come up to me who have said, you know, for 20 years or 25 years, they've been complaining about something, but nobody'd ever listened to them. And now, in the Productivity Improvement Program, we have been listening and making changes.
Of course, TriMet has always looked for ways to reduce costs. There have been employee suggestion programs and other initiatives aimed at saving money. But the PIP provides a new structure to bring forward good ideas.
I think it's about time to come to the people that are doing the jobs, come right down to the front lines, and ask for our input. I was thrilled.
The goals of the PIP include maximize use of existing resources to increase service, create effective employee forums to draw out new ideas, provide challenging and rewarding work with opportunities for professional growth, sustain a work environment that continually finds ways to improve systems and processes, capitalize on new technologies, and work in partnership with the union. By engaging frontline employees in identifying and solving problems, the process removes some of the day-to-day frustrations that affect the work environment.
The difference was, never in the history of TriMet has there ever been a general manager that would sit in a room and allow frontline employees to come talk to him and have them offer suggestions and ideas about how we run our business, and he would listen to them.
An early PIP effort came from rail maintenance workers, where MAX cleaners were having serious problems with new cloth seats. The seats were comfortable and attractive, but extremely difficult to clean and maintain. Employees suggested a switch to vinyl. They enlisted help from the marketing department to research what riders thought. They presented the data to upper management, and the change was implemented.
They screamed and yelled and jumped for joy. They couldn't believe it. That proposal implementation alone probably brought on board another 30% of the employees.
While each PIP is slightly different, they generally follow these steps. First, a work group identifies a process or area for improvement and an employee team is formed. Teams may receive training in such skills as team building and holding effective meetings. In some cases, teams receive training on problem-solving techniques, such as process mapping. Next, the team sets goals and measurements. Savings may be in real cuts or improved efficiencies that allow employees to concentrate on higher priorities. New ideas are taken to the top leadership, which includes a meeting with the general manager and executive directors. By going directly to top management, bypassing chain of command, good ideas can be implemented quickly. The meetings show management's commitment to involve frontline workers in decision-making that affects them.
The main reason I think that I'm a believer in the PIP team is because I know that it has the ear of management.
I was so amazed. I just couldn't believe it. We actually had things that we had asked for or had discussed amongst ourselves for years, and boom, you know, 30 days later, here they were.
Once the new idea is approved, the improvements are implemented and evaluated. Finally, employees take what they have learned and look for further areas of improvement.
I'd say it's working because everybody sees that now we actually can kind of control our own destiny and not only improve things for our own department or working environment and for the general public, but it's an easy way for us to show the management and the company that we do have some ideas that can save a ton of money.
Bus operators brought forward an idea to save time and avoid injuries when they secure people in mobility devices. New, easier-to-use belts were installed, and the policy was reviewed and clarified. Employees saw a big difference from suggestion programs of the past.
There was one, and that's when you wrote your ideas on a piece of paper, and I don't know where it went from there. I never found one that got back to me. I know now that I have a place to go with this and with the ideas without just putting it on a piece of paper and having it, I don't know what goes on with it.
Since PIP began, dozens of new ideas have been implemented. Thousands of gallons and dollars have been saved in diesel fuel by changing idling practices and focusing on fuel economy. Landscaping practices at dozens of park and ride lots, numerous facilities, and along miles of track were changed to xeriscaping. Maintenance costs were cut, and the environment benefited from decreased need for water, fertilizers, and pesticides. Bus dispatch and rail control, which had been located in buildings several miles apart, were co-located to improve communication and shorten customer response time. Lights on Mack's cars were converted from incandescent bulbs to LED lights, saving energy and increasing life expectancy 50 times. The Information Systems Help Desk changed its hours to more quickly respond to employee computer needs. A mentorship program was developed to support the professional growth of potential internal leaders. Bus maintenance changed how and where they schedule repairs. This, along with new scheduling software and more efficient deployment of bus operators, will reduce the need for new bus purchases, saving $19 million over 5 years. When the recession hit, TriMet was positioned to handle the downturn through the PIP process. Rather than looking to cut service, TriMet looked to the PIP. As a result, TriMet was able to absorb millions of dollars in reduced tax revenue without reducing service on the street. The best part is that these reductions will produce ongoing savings. In fiscal years 01 and 02, TriMet eliminated $10 million from the budget through strategic cuts and PIP efficiencies. These cuts included $6 million in operating costs and $4 million in capital costs. And there are other benefits that are difficult to quantify, but that are equally as important.
We've seen an increase in attendance. We've seen an increase in productivity. We've seen an increase just in their morale. People are happy.
The bottom line is, PIP is working. Randy Tom, president of Bioreaction Industries, serves on a TriMet Citizen Advisory Committee. He was skeptical about the PIP at first, but has become convinced.
I, for one, am very, very sold on the idea of PIP being a viable process for TriMet, and I really hope that a lot of the other quasi-government agencies inside of the state and businesses around the state can take advantage of learning from the fact that if someone like TriMet can make this happen, then anyone can make it happen, because they've got all the challenges that any business has, and they've done very, very well in implementing it.
PIP is changing the way TriMet does business. It's becoming part of the culture.
You're always looking now because you've got somebody listening. So you, now that you've got an audience, you don't want to waste any opportunity if you can find a way to improve your workplace.
It's a real satisfying feeling knowing that if you do come up with a good idea that's going to save money, make your job smoother, whatever, that they're going to listen to it and they're going to implement it.
I think every idea, every initiative that the PIP team comes up with will ultimately benefit the public, the ridership.
The long-term goal is to integrate PIP principles and practices into the way the entire agency does business day in and day out. The PIP is making fundamental changes in how workers think.
Mr. Chairman?
Wake up, everybody.
Wake up.
Movie's over.
There's a couple things I should have said in the beginning, is that when this process started back 3 years ago in 1999, Fred Hansen and the management team actually consulted with the private sector before launching this. They went to Arthur Anderson, and while that wasn't really helpful on the nitty-gritty, it was helpful in looking at big pieces of the organization, how to approach this. Also went to Boeing and adopted some of Boeing's inventory management procedures. And but I think then the organization took what they gleaned and then organically created their own process and went from there with obviously good results. This tape, by the way, is something that we originally made along with an employee orientation video for internal use, but we thought it was good enough that we could take it out and actually show it to people, because we're proud of what we've been able to do at TriMet. When we showed this tape in House Transportation, Representative Mabry asked a really good question, and that is every idea a good idea, or does every idea get the same kind of attention? And actually, no, not every idea is a good idea. And what I'd like to ask Carolyn to do is just to take a minute, if you'll indulge us, and talk a little bit about what that process is that we actually use with the PIP committee.
Thank you, Chair Crummell and members. My name is Carolyn Young. I'm Executive Director of Programs and Communication, and my department is Organization Development, the department that spearheads the PIP initiative throughout TriMet. The video gave you a good overview of some of the successes of our productivity improvement process, and it is something that's just beginning. We feel there's a long way to go. It's not fully adopted throughout the agency, which is a very large agency, 2,600 employees in several different buildings, but it's really caught on in a few areas that have done tremendous work with it. The goal, as the video pointed out, is to involve frontline employees, get their good ideas, and it's been very successful in doing that. There's still skepticism in some areas where they haven't launched it, but what we're seeing every week is new ideas coming forward and new work groups signing on and developing PIP teams. The handout that you have gives you an idea of about the process, and on the back there's some examples of things that we've done. But basically, what we do is ask each work group to identify some things that they can do to improve efficiency or save resources. That work group then forms a team. Sometimes these work groups have never worked together in a team. For example, a lot of our maintenance employees, they do their own work. They're not very social. They don't go to meetings. They don't know how to conduct business through a meeting. We give them training in how to do a meeting, how to put together an agenda. We bring a facilitator in if that's what they want. But the teams really control how it works. They get training in problem solving, and they work through an idea. Once they feel that the idea is ready to present, they come directly to the senior management. They bypass layers of middle management, and TriMet's a bureaucracy, just like any other large organization. They get to present their ideas directly to the general manager and the executive directors. And as Olivia said, not all ideas are good ideas, but a lot of them are, and we're finding that our employees who know the job the best are really coming up with some good ideas. It has the added advantage that if we came up with the idea and said, go do this, they wouldn't necessarily buy into it. When they're presenting the idea, they're ready to go, and they're ready to, they're excited, and they're ready to implement it and start counting how much money they're saving or how much time they're saving. So that's in a nutshell the process, and we're seeing PIP teams form throughout the agency. The initial start really was in our mechanics, but now we're seeing bus drivers come forward with ideas. And just this week we had information systems, which is a fairly large department for us because we have all the signals with the train system and that sort of things that are computerized. They've now come forward with their own ideas and they're excited. So that's kind of in a nutshell what the PIP process does, and we feel that we have a long ways to go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving us the opportunity to show this today, and I hope you found it informative and interesting.
It was really great.
We all kind of need some good news right now.
Yes, you're right. We could. Representative Mabry.
Just a comment. I suspect it's true in all kinds of arenas. I know new legislators come to this building and we say, why don't we do something or other? And one of you that's been around a little longer says, you know, we tried that last year and it wasn't a good idea for this and this. And they say, oh, okay. But I think the beauty of this thing is that they work through the process themselves. If they find an idea, was yes an idea, but it's not something that works, they kill it themselves rather than someone above them killing it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is a good idea, they get a chance to implement it. But then they have that added thing of when the new bus driver comes on or the new maintenance guy comes on that hasn't gone through that, and they say, why don't we do this, just like a legislator might do, someone of their peers can say, you know, we talked about that, we ran through that process last year and it didn't work for this and this and this, and it has a great deal more credibility than from somebody in management saying, nah, that stinks. And so I think it very well could be a blueprint for us to try to implement in many of the departments we have here at the Capitol. I commend them. I think it's a wonderful process.
Yeah. Other comments, questions? Representative Nelson?
I just wanted to say, Mr. Chair, that was a wonderful movie, and it would be nice if we employed that process throughout our evaluation of all of our ends. I think it's great. And well done.
Thank you.
Is TriMet a union?
Yes, we have a large union force. Of our 2,600 employees, over 2,000 are members of the ATU. So we do work in cooperation with the union to conduct the PIP business, and we don't allow the PIPs to go into areas that that you really need a union management team to discuss. But we've found that it's the union members that are really bringing forward these ideas.
Got a last follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
I'm assuming that this is a open entity and everything is public knowledge. Is that not correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In that case, what would be the overhead to run an entity that, what does it produce in income a year? You said one-fourth, so it produces $120 million in income from fares a year. What portion of your burden, $280 million, is overhead?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how to answer that question, Representative Nelson, but I'm happy to get back to you with the budget information.
I'm just curious, just to run something that large, and it looks like, according to your video, there's great efficiency, and I want to brag on you a little more. Your overhead's where I think it should be.
Representative Crummell, Representative Nelson, we were asked a similar question, actually, by Representative Zahner on span of control. And when I get that information, I'll get that to you, too. Basically, he was looking for how many employees to administrators kind of thing. I'll get that to you.
Mr. Chair. Representative Kitts.
I just had a brief question. I noticed they said you would cut landscaping costs through different landscape design, which is great. Did you have to get an exemption to do that? Because I know in certain areas there's a certain requirement for beautification and greenery, depending on the square footage of new construction. Did you guys have to get an exemption to be able to do that?
Chair Crummell, Representative Kitts, we didn't have to get exemptions, but we do have to work within the requirements of the local government and through their landscaping requirements. But what we found is that there's a lot of latitude within those guidelines. For example, when we opened the West Side Max line in Washington County, a lot of new landscaping went in along that line. And at the time, the thought was, we want to make this landscaping something that really stands out, that's very attractive. A lot of new trees were planted, a lot of shrubs, all met the local standards and requirements. What we found, though, is that that a lot of those trees and shrubs and plants were very hard to maintain. And so we went back to the local governments, because there are several jurisdictions that passes through, and got their list of low maintenance native plants, primarily when we can utilize those, and went back in and actually decided that it was worth some reinvestment, taking some of those things out and replacing them, so we could have the savings in the long run.
But we
just haven't had any problems working through the local requirements.
Can I follow up?
Follow up.
So you're not circumventing a percentage requirement. Like, I know, for example, on the West Side Synopsis, who just went in, according to this past road, had to put in an exorbitant amount of landscaping at a very large cost to install and maintain. So you guys aren't circumventing the requirement on the percentage. You're just simply taking out more high-maintenance shrubbery and replacing it with less maintenance to cut the cost is where you cut the cost.
Yes, Representative Kitts, that's correct. And what I think TriMet probably overplanted initially, which tends to happen when you've got a new, you know, a new building or a project that you want to show off. And we were able to take a step back from that and say we don't need all of that, because we're going to spend more time trimming just to maintain all of these plants that were out there. Than it's worth. So let's reevaluate this and get things that don't need as much maintenance but still meet the local needs.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. Thank you.
Anything else? I would point out that with regards to landscaping, a lot of the communities, at least the ones that I've been involved in the metro area, are starting to move towards requesting/requiring more native types of species as opposed to species that are being brought in, because I mean there's a reason why they're native. It's because they grow here, and a lot of times you can cut your maintenance costs and your water costs and those sorts of things.
Is that TriMet, Mr. Chair, part of Metro?
Actually, it is. TriMet is not part of Metro as such. However, the Metro Council does have the authority that if they ever wanted to, they could take over TriMet.
So its management is basically just representatives from these three counties.
Mr. Chairman, maybe I could take
a
crack at that. Representative Nelson, it is an independent government. It's a mass transit district in the statute. There are three mass transit districts in Oregon. Lane Transit District and Salem. There are also transportation districts, and there are other permutations of that, but we are a mass transit district. And the board, the governing board of the mass transit district, is appointed by the governor. Our chairman is George Pasador, who is the CEO of Wells Fargo Bank. We also have Dave Bollander from Washington County, who is a former CEO, I believe, of Electroscientific Industries. We have Kay Stepp, who is a former CEO of PGE, I believe. Mm-hmm. We also have the Multnomah County Sheriff is on our board, Bernie Giusto. Who else do we have on the board?
Bob Williams from Clackamas County.
Clackamas County Rep.
Mm-hmm.
And is that it? Oh, we have one and another citizen rep recently appointed, Sue Van Brocklin. But they are appointed by the governor. That's the way it works. We're really partly a creature, your creature, too, creature of statute.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just I won't belabor this. Maybe you could explain it to me further later sometime when you have time. But I'm just curious how an organization like this can impose a payroll tax like this on everybody.
Chairman Crummell, Representative Nelson, you actually give us the authority to do that. And it's in the statute. It was established in 1969 at 0.6%. It has stayed at that level since 1969. In fact, there will be a proposal that will come to you at some point to discuss that and the possibility of increasing that authorization. TriMet, the board actually passes a local ordinance to implement the statute that you, the authorization that you give us. We have to pass a local ordinance just like any other local government does, and there are public hearings, that kind of thing. And by the statute dictates who actually pays it, how it's levied, that sort of thing. Just like any other local government, we actually have less authority because you give us our authority than an independent city or county.
Thank you.
I think one of the lessons that can be taken away from this is that if you want to find out in an organization, especially a large organization, if you want to find out how to become more, how to be more efficient, if you want to find out how you can save money, don't ask the management people.
That's right.
Ask the people that are out there doing the job. Ask the mechanics. Ask the drivers. In the case of TriMet, one of the things that you also have to be very careful of, though, and particularly in management personnel, is running up against what we call NIH syndrome, not invented here syndrome. And I think that because it's very easy for management to say, well, we don't think that'll work, so, and we didn't think of it, so, and we're managers, so obviously it can't. And I think that that's something that sounds like you've overcome very well. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. If there's not anything else, I will close the informational hearing. Thank you very much for showing us the tape.
Thank you.
And since there's not anything else before us today, we will stand adjourned.